Hey Sparks fans, welcome to this, our 39th episode of All You Ever Think About Is Sparks, the only and therefore best podcast solely devoted to the music of Ron and Russell Mayle, a.k.a. Sparks. I am your friendly host, Christian Huey. Hard to believe it's been another year, but our blue rock keeps on spinning around the sun, and here we are still. Our favorite bunch of guys from outer space, meanwhile, remain earthbound, yet still shooting for the moon with every new musical release. 2023 saw the release of Sparks' 3,246th album, The Girl Is Crying in Her Latte, and Cate Blanchett's shoulder dance fad has swept the globe faster than a bullet train. You pull up your favorite Chinese social media app, it's just a sea of swiveling yellow torsos. Okay, so that didn't quite happen, I think. But 2023 was yet another year for the Mayle brothers to continue their hot streak that they've been on at least since the release of both the Edgar Wright documentary and the art film slash rock opera Annette. More importantly, I finally got to see Sparks live in person for the very first time right here in my hometown of Austin, Texas. Mailbag! Mailbag! What's that? Oh, it's mailbag time. That's mailbag spelled M-A-E-L-B-A-G, as if I had to specify. We occasionally get listeners who write in either to tell us how great we are or how wrong we are. And although she wouldn't frame it this way, I think Ms. Becky Jones from the UK did a fine job in pointing out just how wrong, by omission, Monty and I were in a recent episode about the Angst in My Pants song Sherlock Holmes, and she wasn't the only one. Monty and I, if you recall, were stumped as to why Ron and Russ wrote a song with that title and that subject, and in retrospect, it was a pretty big swing and a miss. Here's Becky's letter. Hi Christian and Monty. The album club on the Sparks fan forum has finally caught up with the pod. I'm really enjoying listening to you guys discussing Angst in depth and just had to drop you a note containing my thoughts about the Sherlock Holmes mystery. Why Sherlock Holmes? I think there are at least two possible answers, a very simple one and a more speculative one. I'm sure that Paul, she means Paul Barrett, editorial note, will have a third meta one, and I share with you guys that I love his ideas and his dedication. The simple one, this is Becky's subheading for the next section. Anyway, I listened to this track, writes Becky, imagining a guy in, at best, semi-requited love with a girl obsessed by Sherlock Holmes. Christian is correct in, I think, noting melancholy in this song. It's tragic. As you say, Ron's go-to motif is the guy that can't get the girl. I think in this story, he's got one, but all is not well. To understand this, it's important to grasp what Holmes's appeal to a woman might be. For a certain sort of girl, Holmes's aloof, calculating, reserved slash buttoned up and yet completely in control persona will be very appealing, as will his intellect and breadth of knowledge, allowing her to conjure up all kinds of fantasies. More recent adaptations of the Holmes stories hint at some of this, but this song predates any of the modern era adaptations, including the Jeremy Brett one you've selected for the episode caption. That's not intended as a criticism, incidentally. Our protagonist in this song is a man who shares some of the characteristics of Holmes, but can't be her fantasy of Sherlock Holmes because it resides in her head. He seems to suspect she's losing interest in him, and he's rather desperately asking for her to throw him a line. Fog matters to you and me, but it can't touch Sherlock Holmes. So, explains Becky, they have in common a liking for moody settings and Sherlock Holmes mysteries. Dogs bark and he knows their breed. His intellect is part of the appeal. And knows where they were last night.
Uh-oh. So our protagonist doesn't know where she went last night?
Knows their masters too.
He doesn't know who else she might be seeing, and he's not about to ask.
Oh, baby, hold me tight.
He wants some reassurance.
Just pretend I'm Sherlock Holmes.
She wouldn't cheat on Sherlock Holmes, and he will make do with being the vehicle of her fantasy if that keeps her with him.
Stay, don't give me that same old act.
I read this as him appealing to her not to go out somewhere mysterious tonight.
I can call in Sherlock Holmes.
He's offering to play out the fantasy for her.
He'll want your biography and pictures of you in lace and satin looking great.
But we'll need some evidence to consider for this case. She goes on in this line of thinking, and I think Becky is very convincing, at least to myself. I'm going to skip ahead to what she calls the speculative version. Okay, writes Becky. This is less well developed, but if there's a less obvious interpretation, then I think it would most likely reference the depiction of Holmes on stage or screen and the sexiness or otherwise of the actors who had depicted him recently. There was a Broadway show, The Crucifer of Blood, in 1978, and another off-Broadway show in 1980, The Penultimate Problem of Sherlock Holmes. On the small screen, an adaptation for HBO, Sherlock Holmes, featured on their entertainment show, Standing Room Only, in 1981, and featured Frank Langella. Much later, Langella published a memoir in 2012 called Dropped Names, Famous Men and Women as I Knew Them. In a review in the New York Times Book Review, Ada Calhoun wrote that, quote, Langella's book celebrated sluttiness as a worthy, even noble, way of life. There was so much happy sexuality in this book that reading it was like being flirted with for a whole party by the hottest person in the room. It was no wonder Langella was invited everywhere. So, continues Becky, so maybe there's something there. An eye cocked in Langella's direction, but it seems pretty tenuous to me. Becky goes on, I could rabbit on and on discussing the pod, but I'll spare you. Hi, Christian and Monty. Anyway, I want to thank you so very much, Becky, for taking the time to elucidate all of your thoughts about that particular song and a couple of somewhat similar, but both very thought-provoking and I think crucial interpretations. You've given me a lot to think about, and hopefully we'll think a little bit more deeply and let's say outside the snuff box next time we get stumped on a song. If any of you out there would like to write in with your ideas about how great we've made a certain point or how we've completely missed a point, either way, please don't hesitate to do so. You can reach us at podcastsparks@gmail.com. That's podcastsparks altogether @gmail.com. Thank you again, Becky. Now, moving on. I'm wrapping up 2023 with a couple of interview episodes. This one, episode 39, I'm proud to have had the chance to chat with a Sparks fan out of Cardiff, Wales, originally from Belfast, Northern Ireland, Mr. Tim Hall. It's always cool getting another perspective from Sparks fans in the UK, and Tim has a particular fondness for the New Wave era Sparks of the early 80s, which has been the focus of the pod for 2023 anyway. And although Tim's a bit humble about it, he heads up the Cardiff-based record label Day Trip Records, which I highly recommend you check out and support him. Day Trip Records is home to local, for him, indie rock acts like The Loves. And you can check out Tim's Day Trip Records at daytriprecords.com and daytriprecords.bandcamp.com. And now, get ready for Mr. Tim Hall and dance, goddammit.
I'm here with Timothy Hall, Sparks fan. And do you mind if you just introduce yourself for a moment?
Well, my name's Tim. I'm from Ireland, originally from Northern Ireland, and I live in Wales now, in the United Kingdom. I've been a Sparks fan since about 2006, around the time that the Hello Young Lovers album came out. I heard Kimono My House. I mean, the singles from Kimono My House, This Town Ain't Big Enough, Amateur Artists, are famous songs in the UK. Like, everyone knows This Town Ain't Big Enough for both of us. And yeah. I hadn't listened to Kimono at My House before then. I was about 24.
Yeah.
When I got into them. And
but when Hello Young Lovers came out?
Yeah, when I got into Sparks, I wasn't born in 1974. Yeah.
Well, you're close to my age, so this is cool. This is good.
Great. So, the Kimono My House was the first Sparks album that I listened to, their most famous album in the United Kingdom, and I was just instantly a fan.
Yeah.
It was simple. I was always a big fan of like new wavy kind of music. Like, at the time, it was a Devo obsessive, which I still
am. My God, you and I should talk, man.
I went to see Devo about a month ago in London.
On
their 50th anniversary tour. And
they've already started that, have they?
They've started it in Europe, or they finished it in Europe now. They're going to the US, or doing their US shows at the end of this year, because my brother lives in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And he's going to the show there in November. But the London show was just, what can I say? It was phenomenal.
That's fantastic.
A hell of a show. So, yes, I was getting into Sparks. I was always a big fan of new wave music, like Devo, B-52s, Talking Heads, all that kind of stuff.
Me too. Oh, God.
Fantastic music. That was my kind of music, really.
Yeah.
I wasn't around at the time for that music, because I'm 41 now, but that's what I was mainly into. A very big fan of They Might Be Giants, who recently...
Oh, my.
You're a fan.
We could do a whole podcast, just you and me.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you're a big fan of They Might Be Giants, eh?
Yeah, actually, talking about They Might Be Giants...
Let me show you something, Tim.
Oh, wow.
If it'll
show. Oh, wow. The Flood logo right there.
There it is.
There we go.
Yeah.
The classic. They, of course, recently played with Sparks in LA in the Hollywood Bowl, which, I mean, I would have loved to have made it over for that show. And they did consider it, even though it's very far away from here.
Oh, yeah.
What was I going to say? At the time, those were the bands I was mainly into. So Sparks were definitely... I wanted to check Sparks out, because I knew they fell into the same kind of category of smart alecky, clever, new wave music. Although Sparks predate new wave by quite a while, but they certainly sowed the seeds for angular, awkward music from the early 70s onwards.
Yeah.
A singer who sounds like he's on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And then when I heard Kimono My House in 2006, I instant fan, bought all the records pretty quickly to that point. And the first time I saw them live was in 2008, when they did their 21 album shows.
You went to that?
I went to five of them. I was living in
Ireland. Oh, my Lord. Wow.
I was living in, couldn't. I was such an obsessive by 2008 that I had to get to some of the shows. I was living in Ireland at the time, so I had to fly over, and I made two trips. So I went over for Kimono My House, Propaganda, and Indiscreet. Went home to Belfast.
Good choices, of course.
And then, And I could have gone to any of them and it would have been incredible. Yeah. If I lived in the mainland at the time, I probably would have gone to it all. I would have just stayed in London for a month.
That's really cool. Let me ask you real quickly, because, you know, this is something of, I guess, an admission of mine that I have to tell to old school Sparks fans, because like you, I also was a really, and still am, a huge new wave music fan, you know, from the late 70s, early 80s, you know, like sure. You said, Talking Heads, Devo, huge Devo fan, by the way, I'm sure we'll get into that, you know, and then, oh gosh, spills over into Gang of Four and Late Clash and right. You know, just all kinds of things. My origin story, and this is why I apologize so often, because my origin story wasn't until 2008, actually, you know, 2 years after you. And it just so happened that I was, from All Music or something. I was just looking up, you know, said, if you like this band, you might like these bands, blah, 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 blah. Next thing I knew, I was just, yes. And next thing I knew, I was an immense Sparks fan, just huge. And it was about 2006 for you. So how did you end up, hearing that the album that they came out with that year, Hello Young Lovers, and did you meet any people around you who are also Sparks fans?
Sparks were in the media quite a lot in the UK in 2006, not as much as they have been the last couple of years since Edgar Wright's film came out. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's into Sparks now, but in 2006 they were on TV quite a few times. The first time I heard the contemporary stuff in 2006 was when they were on TV on the Jonathan Ross chat show. It's like mm-hmm. a chat show in the UK, and
yeah,
they did
Jonathan Ross,
an abridged version of Dick Around.
Yeah.
And before that, I hadn't really heard the contemporary stuff because I had so many records to listen to. So I was listening to the 70s albums mostly. And I heard Dick Around, and I was like, oof, that's what they sound like now.
Yeah.
And then when I got Hello Young Lovers and Little Beethoven, I mean, I was obsessed with those records, especially Little Beethoven, which I just think is a perfect record.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And like I was saying earlier, and I went over to the 21, some of the 21 shows in 2008, after those initial three shows, I went back about a month later and saw them play Lil Beethoven and Hello Young Lovers. So I got to see those shows as well, because I wasn't a fan when they returned those albums. Although I was a fan when they returned Hello Young Lovers, but I never made the trip over to the mainland of the UK to see them. Since then, I've seen them overall, I've seen them 16 times. I saw them.
Oh my gosh!
For the 16th time in May at the Royal Albert Hall, the big show that did there.
Fantastic show, I heard.
I've been at Sparks concerts where I've been a meter away from them, and then I've seen them in the Royal Albert Hall where they're dots on the horizon.
Yeah.
But quite a range of experiences of seeing Sparks. I've seen Sparks in Los Angeles twice as well.
Have you?
Like I said, my brother lives in LA, and I went over a few times. And it was actually by coincidence both times that Sparks were playing. When I booked the holiday, they hadn't announced the date yet, and it happened twice. So I saw them there. And I had it. From what I'd read online, of course, Sparks were a lot more popular in the UK than they are in the US. But going to those shows in LA wasn't really much different from going to shows in London. But I guess it's LA that's hometown shows, I'm sure.
Sure.
In middle America, it wouldn't be like that. But the shows I saw in LA were big shows.
Yeah. Home court advantage, we say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's fantastic, man. So you're a new wave fan, right?
Yeah.
So and I am too. So I'm interested. What sort of connections did you make from your new wave inclinations to Sparks, and where in their career, blah, blah, blah?
I knew in the early 80s, like, I'd read a bit about Sparks before I delved into their records, and I knew that the records from the early 80s were very much part of that Los Angeles K-rock scene that they had there at the time. And, you know, I was very into Oingo Boingo, and I loved the Go-Go's as well, which, of course, Sparks worked with Jay in a couple of years on the next album that you're currently covering. So they were some of the earliest Sparks albums I listened to were Angst in My Pants and Want That Sucker. Angst in My Pants, I think, was the second Sparks album I bought. I bought them all so quickly. After Kimono My House, I'm pretty sure I got Angst next, because I was very into that album. I mean, that's 100% my kind of music. I love
Angst.
Angst.
Me too. Yeah. Oh my god,
it's such a great record.
We're kindred spirits. Angst, maybe my number one.
Yeah, I mean, I would have trouble picking a number one, but it's definitely a contender for sure. It's definitely my favorite album that they made in the 1980s, which I guess is most people's favorite 80s Sparks album. But big fan of that record. Yeah.
That's great, Tim. That's great. All right. So I guess let's talk about Sparks in the new wave era, huh? Did you have any particular, you know, things, aspects about Sparks in the new wave era that you wanted to talk about?
I've always found, besides being into that stuff, the new wave music, I've always found that period very interesting as well, because it was another stylistic change, which they had gone through a couple by that point. After Terminal Jive, they didn't really enjoy making that record by all accounts. Like, it was a bit of an impersonal experience, and they were in Europe for most of the late 70s, early 80s, during that Marauder era.
Right.
And it's from interviews, they always seemed like they made a very conscious decision to go back to Los Angeles and hire a band. It's almost like it didn't really happen organically. Like, they were just fed up. They probably had been stuck in France for so long that they just wanted to go home and hire a band and rock out in the Whiskey a Go-Go for a while, you know?
Right.
So I guess that's what happened. And it was like the first time Sparks really had any popularity in the States as well, which is interesting, because, of course, in the UK, they were massive in 1974. I mean, anyone you'd meet who was around in 1974 knows Sparks. Like, whenever I talk to people, they're like 10, 20 years older than me, and I say I'm a big fan of Sparks, it's always like, oh, they're still around. I remember them on Top of the Pops in 74, the scary keyboard player with the mustache, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. It was interesting that it took them that long for America to pick up on them.
Yeah.
It's like they were a new band there as well.
Exactly.
When they were touring Want That Sucker and the next two albums, Angst and Outer Space.
Yeah.
They're mostly playing just stuff from those albums. They very rarely played. Like, I was reading an interview with David Kendrick where he said that they would play this town at some of the early shows on the Want That Sucker tour, and people didn't react at all.
Right.
Which just seems crazy for someone from the UK, when that's like such a famous, like, glam rock, famous rock song of the 70s, because they were like a young audience, and to them, Sparks were just another LA new wave band. They had just shown up, even though they were in their 30s and had been making music and made many records by that point.
Yeah, that's always been interesting to me, because you've got, you know, the Island Records era from 74, 75, you know, and thereabouts. And Sparks were huge in the UK at that time. And then once they started their new wave era, 1981, 82, 83, and they had basically no purchase in the UK and very little in mainland Europe at that time, too.
Only really France, I think.
A bit in France, yeah. They had that single there.
Womp That Sucker sold very well in France.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Just off the back of Terminal Jive. And
went
a few, because there were people still remembered them, because that was like 6 months ago.
Right.
But in the UK, those records were complete flops.
Yeah.
People thought they disappeared after Number One in Heaven.
Yeah.
That was the end of Sparks for about 15 years for most British people.
Right,
Didn't really show up in Britain again until the mid-90s with When Did I Get to Sing My Way, which was like...
Oh, that's right. That was big, I think, in Germany, maybe a couple of places.
It was massive in Germany, yeah. I remember that song when I was a young teenager in the 90s.
Did that hit anywhere in the UK?
Yeah, it got into the top 40. It wasn't like it wasn't like as big a hit as it was in Germany. It wasn't like a big number one or anything, but it was a popular song. Like, the video would have got shown quite a lot on like MTV over here, etc. It was relatively popular, yeah.
No.
And they had no success in the 80s. They did British TV once, I think, which was the Wogan Show when they did Change.
Oh, is that the one where Ron had that cardboard? There was one show that I saw. I know it was in the UK somewhere. Ron showed up on a chat show, and he had this cardboard television cutout around. He's like, imagine this. This is the video. And I think that was the video.
Yes. That was breakfast TV, actually. So they would have been... That would have been at like 8 o'clock in the morning.
Oh boy, okay.
Sorry, you reminded me of that. So they did a couple of appearances for Change. I think Change came out on a UK label, but anyway, that was the only time that there was any hint of UK coverage for Sparks during the entire 1980s,
right,
and early 90s. So it was a very US based during the era, the new wave era, for sure.
The new wave era for Sparks, where do you say the new wave era begins? Is it with Womp That Sucker?
Yeah, I would say we'll Womp That Sucker. I guess Terminal Jive used a bit more of like traditional rock instruments, like there's big guitar on there, but it's still disco music, really. It's a Womp That Sucker. It's just, that's just,
yeah.
100% LA new wave of 1981 in the best possible ways. I would say that was the first Sparks new wave record for sure. Plus Terminal Jive didn't sell in the States at all. The When I'm With You wasn't a hit.
I don't think it was released.
It wasn't released at all. There you go. You can't have a hit if you can't get the record.
Right. Fantastic. All right. Particular aspects. I mean, I'm with you. I love those two records, Womp, Angst, the band they had playing behind them, David Kendrick and Les Boehm and Bob Hogg. I mean, they were just phenomenal. So what turned you on to that particular era of Sparks?
I do think those Terminal Jive's very overproduced, and the Womp That Sucker and Angst in My Pants is more like rock, I guess. Yeah. Not that there's, I mean, there's plenty of keyboard, but it's more raw sounding for sure. It's like a lot more energy, and it's a lot more exciting to listen to. They suddenly got a lot funnier again, I think, with those couple of records.
I agree with you. They got funnier. They got a little serious with the previous couple of records.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, especially Terminal Jive. I mean, there's not really anything too funny on there, I guess. I guess Young Girls is pretty funny.
If you look at it in just the right way,
yeah. If you take it with a hint of irony, it's like... like the famous Oingo Boingo song.
Oh, of course. Thank you for making that connection, by the way. You're the first person I've talked to on this show that made that connection with little girls and young girls. Huge Oingo Boingo fan. Sure. Very similarly creepy songs.
Yeah, sure. There's a band that never had a profile in the UK.
Or
outside America at all. I think they were quite popular in Brazil and some South American territories. Yeah, but
read
Europe,
about that.
No, they never set foot in Europe.
Interesting. Boingo
at all. Anyway, Sparks. That sound is just... It's just perfect for me. And then, of course, with the what you would call the third Sparks new wave record,
Out
of Space, and it drifted away from that a bit. It went a bit more early to midi synth pop, which I like as well. Like, a lot of that kind of stuff, but that record doesn't excite me as much as Womp That Sucker and Angst in My Pants.
Oh, you mean In Outer Space?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So I guess it was quite a brief era, like the Marauder era, just two records and then move on. They do that quite a lot, the two records and then move on. You got your Kimono My House and your Propaganda, move on.
Right. Yeah. They did that very frequently. Are there any other bands or albums around that time that you know are kind of similar in feel to you? I guess what I'm trying to get to is was there something that would have sort of juiced you up from what you've heard before to get into Sparks of Womp and Angst?
I think a lot of those bands we've already mentioned were definitely playing a very similar territory to Sparks were at the time. Oingo Boingo, also in Los Angeles, of course. Quite similar. It's funny. I feel like they had quite similar careers at that time because there were Sparks and Oingo Boingo were real mainstays of teen movie soundtracks at the time, which is quite interesting. And you ever notice that? Like a lot of those movies like Valley Girl and Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Now, I got to ask you. So in the UK at that time, were those known at all, those movies?
I'm not really that sure. I don't.
I mean, of course you were, you know.
No, I wasn't around. I don't think so. I don't know how popular a lot of those movies. No. They certainly didn't raise the profile of Sparks and Oingo Boingo having songs on the soundtracks of those records because neither the bands were popular in the UK at the time. So probably not.
yeah. So do you meet many Sparks? Are you still in Wales?
I'm still in Wales. Yeah,
you're in Wales now. Yeah, I mean, do you come across many Sparks fans?
I know quite a lot of Sparks fans. I do know, and like I said as well, in the last couple of years, a lot of people have become Sparks fans off the back of Edgar Wright's film, for sure. I do have quite a lot of friends that are Sparks fans for sure. But in the UK, Sparks fans aren't too hard to find, really.
They're
a popular band. I mean, the last three or four records have gone top 10 here.
Yeah, that's something. That's crazy. That's not happening here.
I mean, this year they've been on TV quite a lot. They're on Glastonbury, several like televised performances and concerts and being interviewed and stuff. I mean, since about the release of the Hippopotamus album, or FFS Hippopotamus albums.
Did FFS do? I mean, I know they did shows, of course, in UK, but was that something that generated some awareness? FFS shows.
Yeah, for sure.
You got, Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah, I it would have brought brought a lot of people in, I think, for sure. I went to see FFS in 2015. It was probably the first time that I saw a wide range of ages Sparks concert.
Yeah.
It was maybe a little older, but from FFS onwards, people of all ages, from like teenagers right up to the guys that had been there since 74.
Yeah.
And that's what it's like now.
Yeah.
They might be giants. We're always great at that. Their audience always stayed the same age.
Yeah. I've seen these guys six times. I get that.
Yeah, fantastic.
All right. So again, New Wave. Let's focus in on New Wave for a moment. So, of course, you know, you like, there's the New Wave fans we've talked a bit about. What do you feel about Sparks was important to the New Wave scene? Or
I've always thought that Sparks were the first new wave band, really. When you think about
it. Do you mean that from their original...
From their very first records?
Yeah.
I think the template that what is new wave music, Sparks set in the early 70s, the first two records.
Yeah.
The Half Nelson album and Whiffer and Tweeter's Cloven. I mean, that's got all the characteristics of what became new wave music, really.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The vocal style, the sort of anxious sort of vocals,
right?
Quite angular music, and kind of nerdy subject matter, and it's a smart alecky sense of humor.
And there's no blues to be heard.
No
blues, yes.
Yeah. No blues or folk as far as Sparks. Always went. They never really wanted to be associated with what was considered Los Angeles music of the 60s, the Laurel Canyon stuff. For sure. They were definitely going for something else there.
Yeah. The Laurel Canyon stuff. Can you go on about the Laurel Canyon stuff?
Well, I do know that I've read several interviews with Ron and Russell where they've said that they were very much reacting against that kind of music at the time, that was popular in Los Angeles.
So, and just to be clear, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when we're talking about Laurel Canyon, I assume we're talking about this very studio based hired hand kind of what do I want to say?
Like earnest music.
Say it again.
Earnest folk oriented.
Yes, earnest. But I guess what maybe I thought it meant was I imagine hiring people to do a job, which is probably different from the thrust of the kind of music that you're making, I suppose. But sure. I just imagine people coming in as session musicians.
As session musicians never really worked out for Ron and Russell, did they?
Right. You've got, obviously, there's introducing.
Yeah, well, that they've never said anything positive about the recording of that album. That was generally considered a negative experience.
Right.
And they've always said that the best music that they made came from a chemistry.
Yeah.
Music with personality.
Right.
And it's good to see that they've been hanging on to a lot of the guys that have been playing with them for the last couple of years, because especially when they play the new wave stuff now, it sounds so great. Like on the last couple of tours I went to, they've played Angst in My Pants, Eaten by the Monster of Love. They played Tips for Teens in 2022 when I saw them in Ireland.
Oh, cool.
On that tour, which I'd never seen them play that song before. I was very excited.
Yeah.
Those, the new wave material sounds fantastic now. And it's great that they're playing songs off those records, because they didn't so much for a while, I don't think. Like in the noughties, they didn't really play the K-rock era, as they call it, very much. Angst in My Pants was always the song. Angst in My Pants was a bit of a mainstay through the years. They played that in the 90s when they were playing with a duo with drums. But
so you saw them in the 90s?
I didn't see them in the 90s, sorry. But that was one song from the new wave era that seemed to stick in live sets. But they've definitely been introducing quite a few of them in recent years. Eaten by the Monster of Love sounded fantastic in the Royal Albert Hall in May. Never thought I'd hear them play that song. That was great. And Sherlock Holmes, that's another one they play these days. So they haven't played it in the last couple of tours. They played Sherlock Holmes with FFS.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I don't think they played at the show I saw them at. I remember the show I went to, they played Achu for the only time with FFS, because Franz Ferdinand had said in interviews that when they formed their band, that was one of the first songs that they tried to play together, because they're part fans. So I guess they gave that a go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been great to hear the new wave stuff in recent tours, for sure. Hopefully we'll get more of it in the future tours, of which I'm sure there will be many. They don't seem to want to stop anytime soon.
No, it doesn't look that way. So a couple of things. So one, the new wave era. What are some of the things that you think that you associate most with their new wave era?
What musical elements?
Sure.
Well, it was definitely harkened back more to the Island years, the early Island years in setup, for sure, if not musically.
Yeah.
Like, back to having guitar, bass, and drums. I mean, it'd been a long time since they'd done that. It's also interesting that for Want That Sucker in 1981, that's the first time they played live in 6 years, I guess.
Yes, that's about right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like 5-6 years, like big tour. There was a good 3 or 4 albums that they didn't tour at all.
Right.
So those two albums in particular, Want That Sucker and Angst in My Pants, are very live sounding albums.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, it's a lot rawer than possibly Sparks have ever sounded before or since, thinking about it. They're not really studio records so much. It's like they were written to be performed live.
Live. That's exactly right. Yeah. And my understanding is that those two records were developed, if not live, at least they were developed with a band.
Yeah, they jammed, which is quite rare for them.
With what?
They went into the studio and jammed those songs.
Exactly, that's right. Yes, they jammed, and then and most of the time, I believe it was, Ron didn't come downstairs for the recording sessions until the night before with brand new lyrics.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before, which I assume they weren't working like that before. I guess it gives those albums a bit more of a spontaneous, immediate sound than what they've been doing up to that point, especially the two albums directly
before. Right, yeah. Particularly where's my mind now? 1980, A Terminal Jive. Yeah. Of course, you probably know that was an uneasy birth, and that Ron and Russell had some songs, at least in lyric form, maybe in music form too, that they, showed to, who was it? It wasn't, trying to remember now who was the actual producer at that time. It wasn't actually Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah, it was one of Moroder's guys.
Yeah, it was.
I don't remember who it was. Was it Keith Forsey, maybe?
It wasn't Keith Forsey. The same guy who did that Axel F song in the Beverly Hills Cop. And the name is now escaping me. So I'll have to look it up. But yeah, but they presented the, their the songs that they had, and they were just all turned down but one.
Yeah.
Of course, I think we know what that one was. It was one, you know, it was When I'm With You.
Yeah, the one that sold.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, did you, since you got into Sparks, you know, from 2006, you know, on, I mean, you know, do you ever... have you talked to a lot of fans? Did you see many shows during that time?
I've seen them pretty much continuously since 2008. Like I said, the 21 album shows I went to.
Oh, of course. That's
I saw them. And from then on, I haven't really gone more than a couple of years without seeing Sparks.
That's
and
great.
I usually, in the UK, we're pretty blessed in that regard.
You guys are very blessed, actually.
They even played in my home city in Northern Ireland of Belfast. And
they played in Belfast.
Yeah, for the first time ever. And my old housemate booked the show as well. So that was very exciting for us to have Sparks in Belfast. Never thought that would happen.
Yeah.
But in the UK, we are definitely very lucky that we can go see Sparks every couple of years. They're never away for too long.
See, I always thought that was very interesting. By the way, Harold Faltermeyer, that's the name that wouldn't
Faltermeyer,
come to me.
Yes.
Faltermeyer. But so I live in Austin, Texas, and this is not it's not a place where Sparks have been to very many times. In fact, I thought for the longest time that they hadn't been here ever. It turns out that they did come here, I think, back in the Angst tour. But I don't think
they're probably playing a lot of shows in those days.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, Atlantic Records was really promoting them hard all over the US, and then they did Toronto and Canada. But yeah, so it was exciting. But then, you know, I hear from people all over the UK, and they're like, yeah, I've seen Sparks five times last year, the year before, the year before, the year before. It seems like they're always going, even when they're not selling well, even when it seems like, you know, there's not a lot of buzz about them, they always seem to make it a point these days, of course, to do a lot of shows all over the UK.
Yeah, for sure. It's every year or two Sparks are back for a tour. It's been pretty constant for sure. So I've been very lucky to see them quite a lot of times.
What do you think of the new album?
Oh, I love the new album. The new album is fantastic. I still think maybe the Steady Drip 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 album's maybe my favorite of the last three, but I mean, I was absolutely delighted with the last album. It was fantastic. Yeah. They've been all over the media since the record came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
Here it's been fantastic. I mean, their Glastonbury set's been like repeated on TV a couple of times.
You don't see that here, by the way.
Yeah,
That's really cool to hear.
Yeah. So it's Sparks are big in 2023 for sure. Russell actually said that on stage at the Royal Albert Hall about when they lived in London in the 70s, and they would walk past the Royal Albert Hall and say to each other, maybe one day we'll get to play there. And then 49 years later, they're headlining. So I guess Sparks are a big band now, is what you said on stage, and everyone cheered.
For sure. I want to touch on just one more thing, you know, because we started this whole thing about not just Sparks, but also a new wave. If we talked about Devo a little bit. You know, between Sparks, I draw connections all the time, you know, on my show. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But of course, you know, we know Dave Kendrick, you know, he played for Sparks during that time. Then he played for Dio for a time. So, you know, I don't know quite how to phrase this, but are there things that you get from for the music of Sparks from that era that maybe you also get from Devo.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It definitely falls in that same category of smart alecky, intellectual, clever, funny, but not shallow at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of depth to the lyrics. Obviously, what Devo were presenting to the world was something very deep, even if it's presented as quite comical. It was, they were obviously talking
but also
about
very high concept, at least as it started off, right? You know, Devo
were the band the band were the entire concept. They didn't make concept albums. The band was the concept.
They were the concept, yeah.
And everything fell under that umbrella.
Yeah.
But it definitely falls into the same category for me, Devo and Sparks, for sure. And then, of course, David Kendrick went to drum for Devo in those late 80s albums, which I think are very underrated. I'm a big fan of those records. And
are you? I'm sorry. We could start a whole other podcast about this Devo stuff. So,
I say my stuff from those records.
So you're talking about a Total Devo.
Yeah.
And Smooth Noodle Maps.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a shame that David Kendrick only got to play with Devo when they were at their lowest ebb commercially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David Kendrick came back for some tours in the early noughties. I forgot about that, when Josh Freese was probably drumming for some huge band somewhere.
Yeah.
He did a couple of tours about 2003 and 2004, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He did actually get to play with Devo when they were playing huge shows in the noughties.
Actually,
well,
he probably told me that and I forgot.
Yeah. So he did come back for a while. He continued working with Mark Muller's band at Mutato in LA for a while, for sure. And drummed in quite a lot of their studio recordings that they made in the noughties, like various songs they did for compilations and stuff. So he didn't just leave in the early 90s and never come back. He was still around with Devo for a while. So fantastic drummer, by the way. I think
David seems to have a knack making relationships with people who have been deemed difficult by others, and yet they still like him, and he still stays on. So I have to give him respect for that.
I read an interview with David Kendrick recently about he was talking about his wedding in the late 80s, and Ron and Russell and Devo were both at his wedding, and he thought it was interesting to have all these people together in a room for possibly the only time.
But
he's played on some great records for sure. It is a shame that Sparks. I feel it's a shame that after those new wave records, the first two records, Want That Sucker and Angst in My Pants, that the band got sidelined when Ron and Russell decided to move into more electronic ways of working.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And from what I've read, I believe that those guys, David Kendrick and Bob Haig, Les Boheem, didn't play on the records very much at all after Outer Space. Like, they're credited on the sleeves for the next couple albums, but they're barely on them at all.
But my understanding is that they were there live.
Yeah.
But you don't hear them much on the record, thanks to the Lindrum mostly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I guess Ron got seduced by electronic ways of working again.
Sure.
Which I understand as well, of course. But it was a shame they didn't get to make a couple more records like Womp and Angst. I would have loved that. But that's Sparks for you. They don't want to do the same thing for very long, do they?
Sure.
They move on pretty quickly. We wouldn't probably be as rabid Sparks fans if they
stayed the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If they meet Kimono My House, 26 times wouldn't be exciting, would it?
So is it fair to say that your favorite era of all of Sparks is the new wave era?
I think it probably is. It's always been the era that I've been the most interested in, I think, because I'm a new wave fan. Sparks were one of the great new wave bands, for sure. Obviously, there are a lot more than that, but 1981 to 1983, they were up there with the greats of that scene, for sure.
So I have to ask this from you, because you're from the UK and because Sparks were almost nowhere during that time. When you talk about Sparks, either to former fans or whatever, from the UK, do they know what you're talking about when you talk about Sparks from this era?
It depends how rabid a fan they are, I guess. The older folks who remember them from the 70s generally don't seem to know much of their material beyond Number One in Heaven. That's like where Sparks ended for a lot of people, until the last couple of years where they're on TV a lot, at Glastonbury Festival, etc. I've heard a lot of people of that generation say when they've seen Sparks this year on TV, it's like, oh, Sparks are back from 1974.
1974, right?
Yeah, exactly. You remember Sparks from 1974. So, I don't think a lot of people know that stuff for sure. No.
Yeah. How do you feel that the more recent albums, Latte, the one before it, who I can't even think of now.
Steady Drip.
Been talking
drip.
So long. What?
A Steady Drip Drip.
Thank
drip.
You. Steady Drip Drip Drip. Hippopotamus. How do you think those sound in comparison to both the Island days back in the mid 70s and also, you know, those LA new wave days?
I think the last few albums are interesting in that they're not really genre exercises like they used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Have your Kimono, My House, and Propaganda, which are glam rock records, and they stay with that framework. And you have your Number One in Heaven, which is a disco record. You have your music that you can dance to, which is, you know, mid-80s high energy electro music, etc. But those last three albums, it's almost like they've looked at everything they had done before and took what they learned to make more varied records, because those records are a lot more varied stylistically. I think there's all sorts of elements in those records, and I do enjoy that. They've got a lot of confidence now in the everything that they've done, I think.
Yeah. I'm starting to hear more, and this is particularly in the Latte record. I'm starting to hear more of an electronic influence creeping back up in there.
Yeah, I agree. For sure.
I wonder what you make of that. I've, first of all, have always loved when they've gone electronic, because they always seem to do it in interesting ways.
Even in the 80s when they moved into more electronic music, like I said before, it was a shame they didn't utilize that band anymore after Outer Space, but I still love those records. I mean, and they're not especially popular records in their repertoire as well. I mean, I think Music That You Can Dance To is probably my favorite 80s Sparks album after Womp That
After my fan. After Womp or after Angst?
After both of those albums.
Oh, I see. I got
you. Those two are definitely my favorites. But after those, I think Music That You Can Dance To is probably their third best album of the 1980s. It just feels it's like the most adventurous it'd been in a while, for mm-hmm. sure. They were I mean, you might say some of it is field experiments, but they were really they're really going for it with the arrangements on that album, for sure. It almost kind of preempts the naughties stuff, the little Beethoven and the arrangements and the soundscapes, the music that you can dance to album. I think that's a great record, actually. Mm-hmm. They're playing two songs from it on tour in 2023, which is I never thought I would see.
Yeah. I heard them play music that you can dance to, and I was like, wow,
I've always played that song. I don't know why it took them so long to decide. Yeah. They've played it on the last two tours, and it's a great live song. When they played it in the Royal Albert Hall, everyone in the Royal Albert Hall was dancing. It was music that you can dance to, for sure.
That's fantastic, Tim. That's really cool, man. I really appreciate you coming on here. With anything else you wanted to add, either about that particular era of Sparks or part two, anything that you are involved with that I might promote?
Well, I do actually run a record label myself. Released a couple of records.
Okay.
More in the indie pop music vein, was very popular music or very British music. Yeah. I released an album of covers of Kinks songs in 2018, which was the
Kinks,
first
you said?
Yeah, the Kinks. Cool. Yeah.
All right.
And early Sparks influence. So called Day Trip Records, which people can look up, but I don't know if it'd be much interest to Sparks fans, but that's what I do.
Send me a link and I'll make sure to pass it on when I put up this episode.
Fantastic.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you so much, Tim. I really appreciate talking to you. It's always great talking particularly, by the way, and this is a conversation I had with Monty earlier, because we're both Americans, of course, and it's edifying to us to hear from Sparks fans, particularly in the UK, and particularly when it comes to parts of Sparks's career that didn't really resonate over there.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, sure. It's funny, it's been a funny old career for Sparks, really. They've always had these periods where they've been massively popular in one part of the world and then obscure everywhere else. You know, it's happened several times. You know, the glam records not selling in the US at all, but being huge in Britain. The new
and
wave,
and then it goes back the other way with the new wave, and
and then the gratuitous sax album was very popular in mainland Europe in the mid 90s as well. But now it's more everyone's catching up a bit, I guess.
right. Yeah, fantastic. Well, thanks so much, Tim. Hey, man, I'd love to have you back on again. Email me a link and I'll make sure to put that out there when I get this episode up.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. That'd be great.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much. It was good talking to you.
You too, man. Speak to you soon.
You got it.
Bye-bye.
It's okay.